What changes you? What changes you, and how are you changed? That's a question I come with today as we think about the transfiguration of Jesus, seeing him changed. As I said with the kids, maybe from the inside out, maybe from the outside in, I'm not sure. What changes you? Have you thought about that? I want you to think about that. I know the twin culprits that I like to blame for most change is time and gravity. I mean, just the weight of carrying my body around for 50 some odd years, right? Just the weight of it. Stuff sags and droops. And I've been changed. I'm a changed man. So time, gravity, what changes you?
Life's experiences.
Life's experiences. That's very broad. May I be a little more specific? Maybe love, suffering, loss,
disappointment.
Yeah, these are all life's experiences.
Accident.
An accident. Yep. Think about that. What changes you? My teacher, Richard Rohr, whose book we're going to be studying on Wednesday, he says for most of us, the only way that we sort of have a spiritual awakening is through great love or great suffering. Boy, if you can get it through love, that's great. Most of us don't get it. It requires some great suffering. When the rug gets pulled out underneath you and your life collapses in a moment, then you are vulnerable and you somehow are ready for a transformative experience. And usually that's where we have a spiritual experience and God comes to us in those moments and is, I don't know, the source of great comfort, strength, rejuvenation maybe. So those are the questions I came with today, and I'm not entirely sure those are the right questions as we look, honestly, if we look at the transfiguration of Jesus, but it's just what's on my mind. How are we changed? The disciples come with Jesus, a couple of them, it's his inner circle, James and John and Peter. Not all 12, just the inner circle, they go with him. As usual, I like to, you know, when it says after 6 days, I thought, well, what is it that happened right before? And I've gone over this with you. I've been now preaching this in this very church for 10 years now, plus. And I think I do this every year. What was it that was said right before this? Anybody know? Did you happen to look? Did you look, Linda? Because you were reading. You're going to. The verse right before this, the last verse of chapter 16, I just think is interesting. I tell you, there are some standing here today, some of you standing here today, James, John, Peter maybe, the three. There are some of you standing here today who will not taste death before they see the Son of Man coming in his kingdom. Wow, they're going to see the Son of Man coming. I wonder what that looks like. What's that going to look like? And then two verses later, those three who were standing there that day, who may not taste death until the kingdom comes, they saw Jesus transfigured. He was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his clothes became dazzling white. And suddenly they appeared to them, Moses and Elijah, talking with him. Now, my Bible footnote says very helpfully that people of their day believed that the second coming of the Son of Man would happen within the next 100 years. Very helpful, but totally missing the point, I think, in my humble opinion. Here it says, there are some of you here who will not taste death until you see the Son of Man coming. And then, three verses later, they have this wonderful vision. Maybe this is actually it. Maybe this is the Son of Man coming in his glory. His glory, as in his face shone like the sun. And suddenly there was with him Moses and Elijah, right? A couple of characters that are very much sort of in the neighborhood of the Son of Man, you know, we think about the prophets and the law and the prophets, that's sort of what the whole Son of Man was going to come and restore Israel, restore us all, restore the whole earth to a place that just oozed with the law and the prophets. In a word, love and justice, right? That's what we get from the law and the prophets, and that's who's with Jesus. So maybe those who have not tasted death were the ones who were there just 6 days later and went up with Jesus on this mountain and saw this amazing thing. And what happened? He was changed. Maybe they were changed. I've always loved Peter's ambitious response. Lord, it's good that we were here. And then these three words, I read a commentary that really highlighted this for me. I thought this was very interesting. If you wish, maybe the three most important words in this whole story. If you wish, I could build something or I could do something. You know, he goes into this, I'm going to build a booth and we can stay here forever. Isn't this great? We'll just live happily ever after up here on our mountain. But I love that Peter puts in those words, if you wish. Think about how important those words are. And when we, and myself included, when we forget those words, when we offer to do something for God in service of the church or in service of God's greater purpose, we forget the if you wish, if your will, if this is your will, right? We put ourselves in the driver's seat, and when we keep ourselves in the driver's seat, that's great. We're going to be like Peter. We're ambitious. We're action-oriented. We're going to get some stuff done. But it may not be the right thing. I have a friend whose dad, you know, a depression-era father, you know, raised his kids. He said his dad always said, do something even if it's the wrong thing. Just do something, right? That's our answer to everything. Well, just do something, even if it's the wrong thing. But I love how Peter puts a corrector in there, a possible corrector, by just simply saying, if you wish, right? What if we put those three words before everything we did? In other words, if this be your will, and I'm reminded of Jesus' prayer in the garden, how can we not think about that? You know, not my will, but your will be done. If you wish, I could, you know, you could take this cup from me. If you wish, I could not go to the cross. If you wish, but finally, not my will, but your will. Those three words. I'm thinking back to the thing, my original question, what changes you? I wonder if submitting to the will of a greater power might be one of the things, important things, that changes us. Another thing I left off my list was, and it didn't come up, but I wonder if fear changes us. Have you ever been changed by fear? I think fear is one of those subtle foes that works beneath the surface a lot of times when we don't even know it's at work, and it changes us. It makes us think smaller, act smaller, put up doors and barriers instead of opening them. It causes us to be protective and, inhibited instead of being open. So I think fear changes us, which is why I think it's interesting that the disciples are overwhelmed with fear. It's understandable, right? I mean, there's rational fear and there's irrational fear. I don't know, this seems pretty rational to me. They see this guy sort of turned into some nuclear fission. And he's shining like the sun and he's dazzling white. And then they see these people who have been dead for 1,000 years. And they're afraid. And Jesus comes to them, and I said to the kids that he touches them, I think that's true. The cloud overshadowed them, and from the cloud a voice said, this is my son, the beloved. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him. And when the disciples heard this, they fell to the ground and were overcome by fear. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, get up and do not be afraid. And when they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus himself alone. They saw no one but Jesus himself alone. And it's interesting that what finally brought them to their knees in fear was the voice that said, "This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him." I don't know, I find those words rather comforting, right? He's surrounded by the law and the prophets, and we're given this instruction to listen to Jesus. And all that we do, if we just simply listen to him, then we're good. That's kind of our way of having the answer to the question, if you wish. It's good that I'm here. If you wish, I can fill in the blank. Well, if we listen to Jesus, if we follow his example, if we always wonder if the Bible bumps up against itself, like I was saying last week, are we supposed to beat our swords into plowshares, or are we supposed to beat our plowshares into swords? Well, if we're ever wondering about a confusion in the Bible, why don't we just always listen to Jesus? And if there's a disagreement between Jesus and one of the law and the prophets, according to this story, we're to listen to Jesus. So our answer to the question, if you wish, is really to just to discern on a deeper level, what is Jesus teaching on this? Should we open our doors to everyone? Should we be welcoming? Moses might have felt one way about it. Elijah might have felt another way about it. But what Jesus said is going to be our wish. If you wish that we are the church that welcomes all, then we will. So we listen to the one who has changed before us. And in the process of listening, I think we are changed as well. Thanks be to God.